Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review classic episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions' Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling program as they appear on the WWE Network. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by my co-host Roman Gomez, and this is episode number 30, and in this edition we'll be taking a look at the Mid-Atlantic television program that was taped on Wednesday, August 4th, 1982, at the WPCQ Studios, Channel 36, in Charlotte, North Carolina, and aired in local markets beginning the weekend of Saturday, August 7th, 1982. If you like the podcast and want a little bit more of it on social media, just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod. We update everything when we can, with most of the focus on our Twitter page, but we also have a Facebook page as well as a Facebook group. As I said, just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. And if you want to follow along with us as we review these shows, you can do so by signing up for the WWE Network at WWENetwork.com. And you can also follow along by way of David Taub's write-ups of the shows, which are available over at MidAtlanticGateway.com. And finally, if you'd like to take an alternate look at this week in wrestling history, head on over to MidSouthPod.com. The Mid-South Television Wrestling Review Show with the great Brian Last and Mike Mills, who cover today in Bill Watts' territory on episode number 34 of their program. Mr. Olympia, Ted DiBiase, Killer Khan, and Hacksaw Jim Duggan are all in action, while the Junkyard Dog continues to refuse wrestling on television until he gets a match with Ted DiBiase, although they do discuss the Dog's non-title match against AWA World Champion Nick Bockwinkel in Houston, as well as some of the interesting business happenings that were surrounding the Houston office around that time. But Roman, we got a lot of business to attend to today. The broadcast, August 7th, 1982. We have been looking forward to August. We have been looking forward to everything that is going to take place. A very newsworthy show, and it's the kind of show where the matches are really secondary to everything else that's taking place, including some real life stuff that is taking place with Roddy Piper.
Yeah, I think this show is going to have more scoops than Baskin Robbins. There's all kinds of newsworthy things that we're going to talk about on this podcast.
Yeah, and the big news, if those of you who stayed through the show last week and listened to the results, you would have found out about the fact that August 3rd, 1982, Raleigh, North Carolina, at the Civic Center, a lot of big news took place. Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a New York street fight to win the Mid-Atlantic Television Championship. Sergeant Slaughter defeated Wahoo McDaniel. And the biggest news of all, at least what one would have thought, was Jack Briscoe defeating Roddy Piper to win the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship. But that became secondary news of the night when Roddy Piper got stabbed in the chest by a fan after the match, Roman. And this is something that would certainly go down in history of pro wrestling as it changed the trajectory of not only Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, but Georgia Championship Wrestling, as Roddy Piper would start to come over to the good side.
What a difference in the eras, you know? Can you imagine, Mike, is there any wrestler that you could think of today that a fan would hate so much that they would actually want to stab? Now, obviously, we don't condone stabbing or anything, but back in that era, fans took it legit. And Piper was so hated that somebody actually risked going to jail and actually tried basically to commit a murder. That's how hated Roddy Piper was back then.
And I'm going to read for everyone the AP story, which I believe I got this out of the Charlotte Observer. I could be wrong, but regardless, there are two AP stories that I'm going to read for you. One here titled "Wrestler Stabbed by Opponent's Fan." Dateline, Raleigh, North Carolina. Professional wrestler Roddy Piper was stabbed in the chest Tuesday night by a fan of another wrestler who defeated Piper earlier in the evening, police said. Piper, 31, who police said often plays the role of a bad guy in the ring, was treated for a chest wound and a hand injury. William Isom, 43, of Hartsville, South Carolina, was charged with assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, inflicting serious injury, police said. Raleigh Police Sergeant L.T. Higgins said an unidentified 10-year-old girl also got caught up in the brawl and began slapping Piper's leg. Now, the second story here does have a little bit more when it comes to Isom. It's under the title Piper Stabbed. Professional wrestler Roddy Piper was in good condition early today after being stabbed in the chest Tuesday night after getting into an argument with a spectator. William Isom, 43, of Fayetteville, was charged with assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, inflicting serious injury, and with damage to property, said Wake County Magistrate Carl Chandler. Police said that Piper was stabbed after he had finished his match and had gone into the audience to watch other matches and got into an argument with the spectator. Piper had lost the Mid-Atlantic heavyweight title to Jack Briscoe in one of several matches on the card. Isom was being held in the Wake County Jail in lieu of $10,000 bond. Now, Roman, I guess we will unpack the truth before we get into the fiction, because this, as I mentioned, not only affects Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, where Piper actually appears on today's program and speaks a little bit about what took place, although not quite in the most truthful of terms. Georgia put its own spin on it, and as we will look, the Apter magazines would also put their spin on it, as we have an article from Pro Wrestling Illustrated that we will look at too, but let's look at the truthful side of the story, or at least the way that it was reported in the media. Roddy Piper has claimed in his career he was stabbed 3 times, never as effectively, or I guess that would be the wrong way to put it, but never as nearly deadly as this one, as he claims that the stab wound went an inch away from his heart. He does not wrestle on this week's show, that is for sure. He does not wrestle on Georgia TV either, taking place on Saturday night, the 7th. This was taped. This show we're going to be talking about today was taped the day after on Wednesday night at the WPCQ studios, and Piper is there with a suit. He is covered up. He looks like he's got something kind of covering his chest. He looks a little bit puffy in the chest, and as we will see in weeks coming up here, he actually wrestles with what looks to be a bandage actually attached to stitches on his chest. But before we jump ahead on that, Roman, just from what you saw with those stories there, even though it was not changed in the second write-up that I read from the AP, there was always the story that that 10-year-old girl that was slapping at Piper's leg was the daughter of Isom. And that's what caused Piper to look down, and that's what he said his fatal flaw was and what got him stabbed in the chest.
Yes, that's what I had heard, too. And I did some research and saw an interview with Piper from, I want to say it was like 2012, where he was saying, like, you never take your eyes off the knife. But he felt something brush up against his leg. That's when he looked down, and that's when he got stabbed. And when Piper's telling the story in that interview, which, again, I believe from either 2012, 2015, but he said he actually chased the guy. Now, imagine the adrenaline rush you must have after you're getting stabbed in the chest to run after the guy. And that guy better be lucky that he got caught by the cops, because if Piper got a hold of him, he probably would have ended up 6 feet under. I mean, just what a crazy night. But again, that was wrestling. You hear stories about Ole Anderson getting stabbed, and just, you did not, in certain areas, if you pissed the fans off, you were taking your life into your own hands.
And how scary it was for Ole Anderson, too, because I believe his was dipped in pig innards or pig manure or something like that, ended up really infecting him as well, too. And I believe that may have been the case with Blackjack Mulligan, Pedro Morales as well, too, which may have been in Boston. But yeah, the 70s were a riotous time for sure with pro wrestling. And Piper, the heat that was on him, ends up getting transferred to the babyface side of the ledger. And in the next upcoming weeks, we're going to talk about that. And in the next upcoming minutes, we'll talk about some of the fiction that centers around this stabbing with Roddy Piper after we hear from Roddy Piper a little bit later on. But we got to get the show started. And Bob Cottle is out there, and he begins with Wahoo McDaniel and Jack Briscoe, who obviously is the new Mid-Atlantic heavyweight champion. And he doesn't talk much about Roddy Piper, but both of them talk about the man who is coming back to the area. That would be the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
Right here ringside now, Wahoo McDaniel, Jack Briscoe, and Wahoo, we've got a new Mid-Atlantic champ right here.
That's right. Jack Briscoe's a new Mid-Atlantic champion, and I'm sure he's real happy. He went out, he fought a good battle, and he won it fair and square. He can't say anything about it.
What about that, Jack?
Well, I'm just real thrilled about it. I knew that sooner or later when I got Piper cornered, I'd be able to defeat him. As you know, I lost $10,000 and this belt to him right here on television. And I knew the next time I got in a ring with him, this belt would be mine. Now all I need is to work on him to get my $10,000 back. $2,000 was belonging to the Chief, and $2,000 was belonging to Steamboat. But I'm going to work on that.
Well, I think he'll do it, too.
That's right. You know what? I got my work cut out for me, too, Cole. You know, Flair's running around, and he's
still the champ now.
He's still the champ. I'm not taking anything away from it. He's a great athlete. He wouldn't be the champ. But, you know, he's been saying a few things, and he sent a little message to me, and I wonder if we could see it now or if we see it.
All right, let's do that. Fans, watch this.
You're never allowed to be a set of the world champion. And let's face it, we're talking about the class of professional wrestling. Is that the kind of man that won't share a little of his time, his wealth, his style? I've even been known to share a few of my ladies. And you know what I'm talking about. So, Charlotte, I'm coming back. The Carolinas, Greensboro, Richmond, Norfolk, Columbia, Greenville, the Carolinas, the world champion, woo, in all his magnificence, is coming home in his custom-made clothes, driving his big cars, wooing all the ladies. And Wahoo McDaniels and Briscoe and Steamboat and Youngblood and Roberts, light them up, because when you are the man, you are the man. And the Carolinas have come to love, respect, and honor this man. As only I could do. See you shortly. Woo!
Wahoo, he says he's coming back.
Well, you know, Briscoe, myself, Steamboat, all of us, we're looking forward to it because he's the world's champion, you know, and that's what you're here for, is to wrestle the world's champion. Jack has been fortunate to be the world's champion one day I never have. I've held every belt there is in the United States, you know, and except the world's belt, and Flair, I help teach him. I've wrestled with him, against him. I'm not taking anything with him. He's a great athlete. He wouldn't be the world's champion. But I'm going to tell you something, Flair. When you come into this area, you know you got to worry because you got some tough competition.
Jack, you're going to be ready for him also, aren't you?
You bet. That's what I've been working hard for. I won this Mid-Atlantic Championship, and I feel like that puts me right in line for the World's Heavyweight Championship, which I held on two different occasions. And Ric Flair's coming back to the Carolinas. And believe me, I've got my name in on the list, and I want a chance at that Flair and that World's title.
All right, I want to wish you fellas a lot of luck there. Speaking about champions, Wahoo, we've got another new champion.
That's right.
TV champion.
Jimmy Valiant just became the new TV champion, and we'd like to show that. I'm sure he's happy about it.
He's a happy man.
Well, he's a happy man. You know, he's had some long, hard-fought battles with Koloff, and he's come close many, many times, and he just came closer, and he got it, and I know he's happy, and I know Jack is happy, and I hope I'm the next happiest man around here pretty soon.
As you say, all of the fans I know are excited and glad about that. A new Mid-Atlantic champ and a new TV champ. Fans, we're going to see Jack Briscoe and Wahoo McDaniel together.
And there we hear from the brand-new Mid-Atlantic heavyweight champion Jack Briscoe and Wahoo McDaniel, who speaks about Ric Flair, and we heard from Flair, too. Initially, he says Charlotte and then runs through a list of cities. That's because what Flair and Wahoo were both leading to was going to take place that night in Greensboro, North Carolina. And boy, does a big event take place there, as we're going to be talking about next week on the August 14th, 1982 episode. And I know what you're thinking. Hey, wait, Mike, that episode is not listed on the WWE Network. Don't worry. We got you covered there. We'll let you know a little bit more about that later on. But Ric Flair coming back into the area, and there you hear it again. You know, Wahoo, Valiant's got some gold. That's good. The good guy of the ledger is looking pretty good here. Jack Briscoe with the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship, and Wahoo McDaniel going out there again. You know, had lost the U.S. Heavyweight Championship back to Sergeant Slaughter. He is looking at the World Heavyweight Championship with Ric Flair.
What are they doing to me, Mike?
What's up?
Ivan and Piper losing the belt, but on the same show they're talking about them losing it. Two of my favorites are no longer champions, but anytime a title back then changed hands, it was normally excitement. And the fact that you hear Flair is returning to the area, it was such a different time. When Flair came to your area, it was a big deal because he was the traveling world champion. So you knew you weren't going to see him long. He was going to come to the Mid-Atlantic. You might see him for a week or so, and then he was going to go to Florida, or he was going to go to Japan, or he was going to go to World Class, or Portland, or Central States. So when Flair came to your area, you wanted to see it. So there was definitely a lot of excitement with Flair there and two of the championships changing hands. This was an exciting week for Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling.
Yeah, and even in this case, it would only be whetting the appetite of the Mid-Atlantic fans, because as we go through the results, you'll find out that Flair was back out on the road again and would not become a little bit of more of a regular presence for another couple of weeks. But after Wahoo and Jack Briscoe wrapped up with the interview, they got into the ring and had a match against David Patterson and Ben Alexander, and Stu Schwartz is our referee of the day. And Roman, this match gave Wahoo and Jack Briscoe a little bit of work in there. Patterson and Alexander were not too much trouble here. The babyfaces kind of rolled in this match, and Bob Cottle just basically kind of used it as a backdrop to talk about Flair coming into the area and some of the changes with the title belts.
Yeah, and one thing that really kind of stood out to me in this match is that you actually saw kids in the audience. When I looked at the crowd, there were kids there under the age of 10. And you look at modern day wrestling, I mean, I know there's a pandemic and everything, but before the pandemic, when was the last time you saw a bunch of kids at the matches? You know, and that was just something that stood out to me in this match. And then there was one spot where Wahoo had picked up Alexander for what appeared to be a slam, and he kind of jumped and then almost like did a tombstone, and it looked like it could have been really dangerous. And I don't know if Wahoo improvised in the middle of the move or what, but that's something to look for. It looked a little bit different than a normal slam, but yeah, pretty easy victory for Wahoo and Briscoe, and just kind of a showcase type match for those two.
Yeah, Briscoe made Patterson submit to the figure four as Wahoo McDaniel got in the ring and chopped Alexander down to make sure that he did not interfere. And then we rolled into our next match with Bad Bad Leroy Brown, the new look of Bad Bad Leroy Brown, teamed up with Sir Oliver Humperdinck, faced off against Ron Ritchie. And Humperdinck joins Bob Cottle on the mic. And obviously, you know, Sir Oliver Humperdinck is the big stick in the area right now. And with Roddy Piper, and they'll have an interaction a little bit later on with Roddy Piper leaning over to the babyface side. You know, Humperdinck's status really goes up, because other than Sergeant Slaughter and his privates, by far Humperdinck is the big heel of the area with his group that he has. And this match didn't take too long, and Ron Ritchie didn't get in much offense. You know, the little bit of that we saw of Ron Ritchie earlier on in 1982 is pretty much subsided here, as so many other faces have come in, and he's used as fodder here to get Bad Bad Leroy Brown over, who drops a big old elbow, and then that's that.
When watching this match, the one phrase that kept coming to my mind was, this was a cat playing with a mouse. You know, you get the feeling that Leroy Brown could have finished this match off in about 45 seconds, and it went about 6.5 minutes, and every time Ritchie got in a little bit of offense, it was probably no more than two moves, and Brown was able to stop him, get in his tracks. And one thing that Sir Oliver commented on commentary is the height of the hip tosses with Leroy Brown giving to Ron Ritchie. There were a couple times where Humperdinck said he was 9 feet in the air. I don't know if that was accurate or not, but with Leroy Brown's height, when he delivered like a hip toss, it was really impressive, because you could see a lot of hang time. But yeah, this was good to see Leroy Brown in normal wrestling trunks, and the blonde beard was a little bit weird, but I guess that was just part of him being a heel.
Got to have a little bit of flash there. He's got the oddly colored blonde beard. Still getting used to that. You know, when you got hair that dark, you got to kind of do layers there. Either that or strip it all out. But the diamond chip in his ear, and Sir Oliver Humperdinck talking about him coming the first black world heavyweight champion. But really what he's
glad
into
that
is
didn't
a,
happen.
That certainly does not happen, but he's got a feud with Ricky Steamboat that's going to be raging on, and we're going to hear from Steamboat a little bit later on in the show. And, you know, the thing with Leroy Brown is it's just too bad he could not stay in better shape and stay down in weight, because he could move a little bit, and he had such a presence, and the whole, hey, you know, he had an absolute presence. And, you know, it's just unfortunate as time went on, just things kind of got away there a little bit, because, you know, you see him mix it up with Flair or I believe it was early 82 in Georgia, maybe it was 1981 there, and in different positions. You know, Leroy Brown's a pretty good presence. Now, this feud with Steamboat isn't exactly too natural, but it won't be sticking around for too long either, as we're going to find out. But as we move on with the show, usually when we get to this point, we've been talking about the in lieu of promos that have been taking place, where we have had guys come out and basically fill time by doing practice promos. Your David Pattersons, your Ken Timms, your Buddy Landells, and all of those guys down the line, you know, young guys out there trying to cut promos, some a little bit better than others. You know, if we don't hear much from Keith Larson or somebody like that, we might be a little bit better off. When we get the Pattersons and the Mike Davises of the world, you know, businesses kind of pick up there a little bit. But in this case, we go back to what the WWE Network was doing at the very beginning, which was taking those promos out and putting in promos from a localized market. And in this case, we get them from Charleston, West Virginia. And the first people we hear lined up with Big Bill Ward are the Privates, Nelson and Kernoodle, along with Ivan Koloff. And we'll have to describe after Ivan Koloff is done with what he's holding.
Fans, let me introduce a couple of champions, the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champions, Private Kernoodle and Private Nelson.
Well, believe it, the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champions, we still got our belts, and we're planning on keeping them for a long, long time. You know, they've thrown every team at us that they could throw at us. Johnny Weaver, Jake Roberts, Porkchop Cash, King Parsons, and now they want to throw guys like Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood at us. Well, I tell you what, you guys want a chance at these belts. You come on, but I don't think you're ready. Your hands bend as far as we're concerned, and we're going to keep these belts. Ain't that right, Private Kernoodle?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of talk going around the United States and the world that Sergeant Slaughter has lost his United States Championship belt, which is true. How in the world Wahoo McDaniels did it, I don't know. I wasn't there, but it's true he did. And he was suspended for 30 days for snipping a little bit of that hair, what little he's got left, out of his head, which I think was very, very appropriate. But Sergeant Slaughter has instilled something into us. He wants us to maim our opponents. He wants us to crush them. He wants them to make them bleed, and that's exactly what we intend to do. True, he can't wrestle for 30 days, but he can depend on Nelson and myself to take care of where he let off. And while he's over in Hawaii enjoying himself, getting sun with the hula girls and all that, I just want everybody to know that we're in contact with him, and we're going to take up and do just exactly what we want to do. When you're in Sergeant Slaughter's camp, you do what you like, and you like what you do.
Let's call in Ivan Koloff, the Russian Bear.
You know, I've declared war on all American wrestlers. I don't care actually what country they're from, because I am from the number one country in all the world. This has been proven in the past in all different type of sports. Now, I don't care whether it's the Boogeyman, Valiant, Tommy Rich, the Freebirds, Superstar. I don't care who you want to put in the ring. I want a belt around my waist. And to get this, I'm going to have to defeat men such as this in Charleston, West Virginia, or any other place. I don't care, like I said, what I have to do. And to prove to the American people, after I beat these Americans and show them my superiority, I'm going to dress them up. Dress them up and show them exactly who is the number one wrestler in the world today.
And there we hear from Ivan Koloff. And before we heard from Ivan, we heard from the Privates. Still your Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champions, and Roman, we may have jumped the gun there, or the network may have jumped the gun there when it came to these localized promos, as we have not had a big incident with Sergeant Slaughter and Wahoo McDaniel and Scissors yet, and we haven't had the issue that has caused Ivan Koloff to drop his Siberian glove as well as his Russian chain and actually hold up a black and red dress that I guess he plans on embarrassing Jimmy Valiant with and placing this boogeyman who may be a little bit sick of the head into.
Yeah, I guess it's not enough to wish him dead, as he's done in previous episodes, but now he wants to humiliate him and put a dress on him. So the feud continues with Ivan and Jimmy Valiant.
Yes, and we have Sergeant Slaughter, who is going to be filling out the month here before he gets his suspension. And his suspension, by the way, does not put him in Hawaii, although he may have made a stop there. It actually puts him beginning August 27th, 1982, into the New Japan Pro Wrestling Bloody Fight Series Tour, where he is going to be teaming up with all sorts of interesting people, including in his first night there, Roman, and you will love this, at Corican Hall, the very natural matchup for the Japanese of Antonio Inoki and Hulk Hogan against Sergeant Slaughter and Ed Leslie. Yeah, Ed Leslie, Brutus the Barber Beefcakes, Hulk Hogan's friend. He is there. We see Chris Adams, Ed Leslie, and Sergeant Slaughter together. We get Slaughter and Rusher Kimura. We get Slaughter and Pete Roberts and Chris Adams. Ed Leslie, mass superstar, and Sergeant Slaughter. Another natural six-man tag team here, but facing off of all the big guns of the New Japan era at that time, including Antonio Inoki, Yoshiaki Yatsu, Kengo Kimura, Tatsumi Fujinami, just some big, big names there. So that's actually where Sergeant Slaughter would be off to after a little while. But yeah, we're going to probably have to come back around again and fill in some of the details when it comes to this stuff as the weeks go on. And in fact, coming up next week on the show, we're going to hear an incident that takes place between Wahoo McDaniel, the Privates, and Sergeant Slaughter that is going to certainly intensify the feud between Wahoo and Slaughter. But back to today's show on August 7th, 1982. It's now time for Ricky Steamboat, still donned with a beard, to face off against Juan Reynoso. I don't know, Roman. I still like the beard here. Cottle, during the match, of course, obviously stoking the feud between Steamboat and Leroy Brown, and doesn't take long for Steamboat to lay waste to Juan Reynoso and fire himself out of the ring.
This was a very unselfish performance by Steamboat as he let Reynoso get in some offense. And the way Steamboat sold for him was very believable. And Mike, we are going to have our second Brutus Beefcake reference here.
Really?
Steamboat hit the jumping knee right before he came off the top rope, like how Brutus Beefcake used to do it. And, Jumbo Shiruda in Japan would do it, the jumping knee. And just after watching the Steamboat match, again, I just keep thinking to myself, after every Steamboat match, another hard-fought victory. Steamboat sells so much. And just when he finally gets the win, it's you feel like he's been through a battle. And it doesn't matter who he's against. And that's what makes Steamboat so freaking impressive, that anybody from the bottom of the rung all the way to the top, Steamboat can have a good competitive match with.
And the guy he'll always be historically tied with, Ric Flair. Two peas in a pod that way. Could not give guys too. In fact, as world champion, of course, a lot of people think that Ric Flair gave everybody too much. But I tell you what, you know, for a guy like a George South or for a guy like a Juan Reynoso in this case, you know, it was their glory time, and Steamboat wins with a flying body press off the top rope. You know, Reynoso's so short, you know, for a second there, the way the angle was, it looked like Reynoso had the, you know, if Steamboat came a little bit quicker down on him, we would have had a twisted knee situation or something like that for Reynoso, but thankfully that wasn't the case. Steamboat gets the win and then immediately charged outside the ring to talk to Bob Cottle, being fired up about everything that was going on with Leroy Brown. So here we'll hear the end of the match and then Steamboat's comments.
High in the air, he got high enough into the air and got a knee right into the chin, off of the rope. The top rope now is Steamboat as Reynoso is trying to get to his feet. Steamboat standing in the corner of the ring. Reynoso gets up right there to greet him, Rick Steamboat, and here is Steamboat charging over here at ringside, and I think you got a message or so here, Rick.
First of all, I'd like to congratulate Jack Briscoe.
I would also like to congratulate Jimmy Valiant. Everybody had gotten out here one time or another down the road a little ways and said things were going to change, but they're just starting right now. Leroy Brown, I want to be happy just like everybody else, man. I just want to be able to get by. But it seems as though you and the House of Humperdinck and the crew and whoever seems to be standing in my way. Leroy, somewhere down the road, you and I will meet again.
All right, fans, we'll be back now.
Hey, man, stop harshing Steamboat's vibe, okay? Steamboat almost giving me a little bit of vibe like that. But serious, dead serious in what he said, he's going to do when it comes to Leroy Brown and Sir Oliver Humperdinck. And again, while not a natural feud, you know, it, as you spoke about with Juan Reynoso and everybody else Steamboat gets in the ring with, when you got a guy like Leroy Brown, who is limited in ways because of his size, one of the most perfect persons that you can have to fly around for him certainly is Ricky Steamboat.
There's a reason he's called a legend, you know, and me personally, I'm glad the Steamboat and Leroy Brown thing did not go on too long, because it's just, I don't know, it just doesn't have that marquee feel to it, Steamboat versus Leroy Brown.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like a natural matchup. It doesn't. But, you know, one thing that's also notable that took place, you know, right there with Ricky Steamboat is he once again doffs his cap to Jimmy Valiant, just like everybody else has with the, you know, talking about him in the TV title. And, you know, it's amazing. When we started doing these shows at the beginning of 1982, we have Ivan Koloff and Jimmy Valiant. And here we are all the way in August. Another way that times have certainly changed where we are starting to see the gimmick matches and what ultimately would be the blow-offs of this feud, at least for the short term.
Ivan and Valiant, they had so many different wars and so many different gimmicks and whatnot. So to have it be for a title just adds a little bit more to the feud, you know, and to have Valiant emerge as the champion in this episode, and it just adds a little bit more spice to it.
And now we get to a really spicy portion of the show. We have reached the portion where Roddy Piper is out to speak to the people. And it is hard for me to believe that a bunch of fans who would line up at WPCQ Studios on a Wednesday night in Charlotte, North Carolina, every single last one of them guaranteed knew the news about Roddy Piper getting stabbed the night before in Raleigh. And here we get Roddy Piper speaking somewhat vaguely about his news before he is interrupted by Sir Oliver Humperdinck. We're also going to hear from Hump and Ivan Koloff. And when this is over, we are going to get into some of the things that Piper says, as well as how that ties in to the fictional part of Roddy Piper getting stabbed in Raleigh, North Carolina. But here's the rowdy one, a little bit subdued.
All right, fans, and right here, of course, Roddy Piper himself. Roddy?
Well, you see, it's like this, you know. All kinds of people are talking about all kinds of things because it's been all over the papers, all over that Roddy Piper got hurt, right? It's been all over the papers because Roddy Piper goes out and there's some geek out there flashing around all kinds of stuff, and he's in front of a whole bunch of kids, so I'm going to stand there and he's challenging me, and he thinks I'm going to run away. Well, you are wrong, mister, you see. So what I did is I chased him down, and what I did is I figured out something. I'm listening to all these kids talking about how cool they think they are, about how they got their cigarette rolled up in the sleeve, how they spend a year in the clink. Well, let me tell you something, brother. I'm proud, too. I'm proud that I'm smart enough. I never did go to jail, brother. I'm smart enough. I don't smoke those cigarettes. I'm smart enough. I don't gotta go around in a whole bunch of packs and be a great big hero like these jerks did. But all of a sudden, they find themselves scattering. Like Jack Briscoe, he comes on with his belt that he's won from me, and he's so proud. Well, I guess he should be proud winning something from me, Mr. Jack Briscoe. But it ain't the first time that I've lost at something. It ain't the first time that I'm going to be able to get up. You see, the sign of a champion is somebody who can get back up, Mr. Briscoe. Somebody who can go and do it. And you think for one second that I ain't getting more vicious than ever. You're wrong, Mr. Humperdinck. It's nice to see you.
Good to see you, Mr. Piper, sir. You know, I heard you talking about Jack Briscoe, and it's a shame that you lost that Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship because I knew how much it meant to you, but perhaps...
Just a second. Yes, I did. It did mean a lot to me, that.
Had I been sitting in the corner that night, if you had been working for me, that might not have happened.
If I was working for you...
If you were working for me, you see what I'm saying?
Well, perhaps.
I sent contracts to every major wrestler in the United States. Uh-huh. And I knew I'd see you tonight, and I saved this for you. Consider this.
A contract?
A contract.
You'd like me to consider this?
Consider it.
Here, consider this.
Well, a little upset. Maybe a mental lapse. Yeah. I'm not gonna jump on the man's case. He's been through a lot. But this man here has been through a lot, too. Ivan Koloff, and I'm talking about Jimmy Valiant. And I'm talking about New York City street fights. And I'm talking about the fact that you don't see that TV title around Ivan Koloff's waist because Jimmy Valiant stole it from him. That's right, he stole it.
No way.
He used a chair, a metal folding chair, in that street fight to win the title. Well, let me tell you something, Jimmy Valiant. If you think you're going to hang on to that belt for a long time, you're sadly mistaken. because we've got you right where we want you, brother. We've got you in the Siberian Salt Miners Glove match, and it's going to be the end of Jimmy Valiant. He's going to get his title back. Tell him about
this
it.
This is right. Got to climb to the top of the pole, 12 feet tall. Grab the glove down, Boogie Woogie Man, and destroy you and take my TV title back. I suppose you feel you're very proud now. All the Americans are yelling at you, USA, USA, TV champion. Well, it's going to come to an end for you, Boogie Woogie Man. And this is going to end it for you.
All right, fans, that's it right here ringside.
To be my belt.
So there we hear from Roddy Piper, who speaks, as I said, very in vague terms there when it came to the incident that took place. We will now talk about some of the fiction that took place there in that promo. Obviously, we read to you the news reports as to what happened there. Roman mentioned that Piper had talked about chasing the fan down after the fan had stabbed him. What was not mentioned in any of those articles were a bunch of young teen ruffians that were standing around. I don't know if they had grease in their hair and they were standing outside of their Cadillacs or anything like that with their cigarettes rolled up in their sleeve, but I guess we see the tact that is going to be taken here when it comes to the kayfabe portion of this story, Roman. And after we kind of get your thoughts on that part of the deal, I'll bring up this Pro Wrestling Illustrated story, which took some of the original news story of what happened, as well as a heaping dose of what Piper had said there to write a story in their December 1982 issue.
Yeah, this is very vague, you know, and this happened, this interview that took place was a day after the incident. So if you had seen the news, maybe they didn't fill you in on all the facts, or, you know, maybe it was still, people were still waiting to hear the whole story, but very kind of vague, kind of danced around it a little bit. Maybe they weren't allowed to talk too much in depth. I don't know. But if you did not know that Piper got stabbed, you definitely wouldn't have known it by this interview. Because like you said, he kind of dances around it. And, oh, I've never been to jail and, you know, and everything. And it was just kind of interesting, the tone of it. And it was just, I don't know, it was like leading you to water but not letting you drink, I guess, is one way of putting it.
Well, there was a lot to drink when it comes to this December 1982 edition of Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And I believe, as we've spoken about before, when it comes to the cover dates of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, they were always very interesting. They would be 2 months after they would appear on the newsstand. So this December 1982 edition probably came out at some point in October of 1982. And then it would actually cover events because of the deadlines it would take place for publishing. It would cover events that took place in August of 1982. So it is in this edition with Hulk Hogan on the cover, as well as David Von Erich saying that he'd rather quit wrestling than be Dory Funk Jr.'s puppet, as well as Jerry Lawler versus Andy Kaufman Part 2, the feud explodes on network TV. We get Roddy Piper, a story on him in the King's Court, as written by Peter King. And I won't read the entire thing to you, but basically it begins with, "For years we've been receiving letters from fans in the Pacific Northwest, which always seem to begin the same way. Dear sirs, why do you hate Roddy Piper so much?" Because, of course, Roddy Piper was a big fan favorite, not only in the Pacific Northwest, but at times in California throughout the years. But I will skip ahead to this story and tie it into what Roddy Piper had just said about some kids there, as they kind of mash a bunch of things together. It says here in this paragraph, quote, "In early August in Raleigh, North Carolina, Roddy Piper was responsible for one of the bravest acts a man can perform. He put his life in jeopardy to save another human being. In fact, his bravery was responsible for saving the lives of many human beings. It is a story you may have already read in the newspapers or seen on television, but I believe that it deserves to be recounted here. Piper was walking down a crowded Raleigh street when he heard cries for help in a parking lot. Running to see if he could help, Piper saw a berserk man with a knife terrorizing a group of children. What would you have done in a situation like this? Most of us would probably either stand there transfixed by fear or run to get a policeman. Either way, it might mean the wounding or death of one of the children. Piper charged at the knife-wielding man without a thought of his own safety. He was able to disarm the madman, but not until Piper had sustained a knife wound in the chest. Soon the man was taken away and the children were safe again. Piper did not even wait around to be thanked. In his own mind, he had done what he had to do. He had done the right thing, and Rod Piper feels that it is wrong to accept thanks for doing what should be done. But the story does not end here. Piper refused to take any credit. As I turn the page to page 54 to continue the story here. See, this is a legitimate magazine here I still have. His heroism, and it was Gordon Solie, not Piper, who broke the story on Georgia Championship Wrestling, as Solie said on the air, Rod Piper is too modest to tell the story himself. Fans in Georgia, many of whom had booed Piper unmercifully just a few moments before, stood up and applauded. According to sources at GCW, Piper, who was backstage when Solie made the announcement, blushed in embarrassment. "That's very nice of Gordon," Piper reportedly said, "but it really wasn't necessary." Roman, as I put this magazine down, I can report to people that we will hear in the next upcoming weeks that very deal with Gordon Solie and Roddy Piper. And later on in this show, we will hear what took place on Saturday night, August 7th, on Georgia Championship Wrestling, because not only did Roddy Piper appear on Mid-Atlantic TV on Saturday, all across the Carolinas and Virginia, but also down in Georgia on Nationwide TV, making his return to Georgia Wrestling after being off for a couple weeks. And we start to see the same turn to the good side there, and we'll get into that. But do you have any thoughts on the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Weston Magazine, After Magazine version of the story?
There is an old adage that's been around for years that, as far as journalism or reporters, never let the truth stand in the way of a good story. And that is so appropriate on this, that Piper was saving kids. And, you know, it's great. You know, they wanted to turn him face. And part of the reason they probably wanted to turn him face was so he wouldn't get stabbed anymore. He was such a believable heel that people wanted to kill him. So, you know, but just hearing you recall that story, and I remember reading parts of that before, and it's comical, but in the world of wrestling, anything is possible.
Of course, and we will spin it back around to the actual promo that Piper had cut on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, too, to notate that obviously Sir Oliver Humperdinck came out to interrupt him and offered him a contract, which Piper ripped in half, threw up in the air, landed on Humperdinck. He stormed off. Ivan Koloff kind of looked a little bit confused there momentarily, but nobody jumped the gun, as Humperdinck mentioned, that Piper was going through some things right now before Uncle Ivan dove in there and started talking about Jimmy Valiant getting his TV title back. So even though we are on the backstretch of these matches, they are still taking place. And, you know, Roman, he talks about the Siberian glove match, but, you know, he lost the title in a New York street fight. We've got Russian chain matches going on. I mean, if this isn't ultimately going to be the blow-off to this feud, I mean, I don't recall there being scaffold matches. I don't know where you could go from there.
Well, I want to know what the rules of a New York street fight were that you could not use a chair. Because Humperdinck said he illegally won the belt by using a chair in the New York street fight. But, and kudos to Oliver Humperdinck for being the most understanding and sympathetic heel person, as Piper ripped up the contract, threw it in his face and stormed off. And Oliver basically was like, well, he's, you know, kind of frustrated that he lost the belt, and, you know, and I understand. And it was just very different to see a heel be so calm when something did not go his way like that.
See, that's good coaching right there. That's good director of player personnel work right there. You know, you got athletes, they're all fired up, he's got some real life things going on, you know, some heavy stuff taking place, you know, you just kid gloves, you know, you want to try to get into his good graces right there. You know, Humperdinck's expanding out the house. Obviously Piper would be a lovely member. He's tried to go after Sergeant Slaughter, he's got Gene Anderson, he's got Matt Bourne, the Ninja, obviously Leroy Brown and Ivan Koloff. So, you know, hey, we can ease off here a little bit and see how things play out. Well, we know how things play out, but we'll get to that. But first, we get to our tri-state portion of the proceedings, as Porkchop Cash and Ali Bay are on our TV screens, as Porkchop Cash and King Parsons, the former Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champions, faced off against Ali Bay and Ken Timms. And, You know, this was a solid lower mid-card TV match. You know, they don't have a lot of tag teams going right now. Cash and Parsons are still there. You know, this is probably as good as they've looked on TV as a team, having Ali Bey in there, who, you know, was familiar with both of those guys, especially with Porkchop Cash from being down in Tri-State. And you got Ken Timms in there, too, who was even a good worker at that young point in his career there. And, you know, this was just a good TV match. Not great, not epic. You're not going to, you know, there was no reinvention of the wheel here if you missed it. But, you know, just a solid match there with, you know, a solid finish in that King Parsons got up there and delivered two strong, stiff drop kicks to Ali Bey's face, which led to the win.
I want to know what took so long for them to get to the ring. It was interesting. They were waiting and waiting for Porkchop and Parsons. And Bob Caudle even says their opponents, well, there's an empty corner there. We're waiting on them. And then finally they run through the crowd and get to the ring. And Porkchop Cash did what Parsons used to call the rumper stumper, when he would jump up in the air and stick his butt out and hit his opponent in the chest and knock him down. And I just wondered, you know, it popped into my head, like, I wonder if Parsons kind of saw that from Porkchop Cash and figured maybe I should work that into my repertoire, you know, down the road. But nothing out of the ordinary or anything, just a basic match that you figured Parsons and Porkchop would emerge victorious, and that's what happened.
Now we go to our second set of what localized promos. You know, as everybody else is hearing about events coming to their town, as people that were watching this show in Greensboro, they were for sure getting Ric Flair and Wahoo McDaniel talking about their upcoming showdown that night for the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship. As they get that, what we get are these promos that, again, are set to a little bit future in time. And let's just go ahead and reveal it right here, Roman. Paul Jones is going to be turning dirty. And as you will hear during the results that I read off a little bit later on, there was no build to this story, really, at all. He will just show up at the TV tapings next week, and he will announce that he has taken the money of Sir Oliver Humperdinck. He has gone into the House of Humperdinck basically for the same reason that Wahoo McDaniel was talking at the beginning of the show. He wants some gold. And Paul Jones is frustrated about not having any gold around his waist, and he turns dirty. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up and spoiling that is because Mike Rotundo is about to spoil that for you, as we hear from both Mike Rotundo and Jay Youngblood, along with Big Bill Ward, speaking to the people of Charleston, West Virginia.
Fans, it's always a pleasure to bring in one of the top NWA wrestling stars, young Mike Rotundo. Mike, you've got a lot of fans all over the country.
Yes, I'd like to say hello to Charleston, and I'd like to also say that there's been a lot of things happening recently in the Mid-Atlantic area. People have been getting hurt in and outside of the ring, and a thing I'm talking about is Jack Briscoe got jumped by Mr. Paul Jones. And here's a man that I used to travel the highways with, who I thought was my friend. But as the last few weeks I traveled with Paul, I saw him reading these books about self-improvement, how to succeed in life. And I don't know who the author of these books were, but I'd like to get a hold of them, because I think they've turned Paul's head. Now when you look into Paul's eyes, all you see is dollar signs. And I feel this is a bad attitude to have about any profession, about life, and especially about living, because there's more to professional wrestling than just a dollar sign. There's a thing called honor, and I think that most people would take my side in believing this, and I think Paul Jones should get some gravity boots, hang himself upside down, and let some blood rush back into his head, and maybe when he stood up, he would know that he's on the wrong side of the fence and there's more to life than a dollar.
Thank you, Mike. I'll buy that 100%. Let's call in another great wrestling star, Jay Youngblood.
I'll tell you what, Mike had a mouthful to say there, and he's exactly right. You know, when you're talking about the ways of life and the way people change, not only for, you know, well, let me just put it this way, for money, as Paul Jones has done. He's jumped the fence one more time. Jones, you jumped the fence one time with Baron Von Raschke, and you took it upon yourself to wrestle against Rick Steamboat and myself. And now you came back and you said that you saw the light and you said you'd never do it again. But all of a sudden, you must have run short of cash or you couldn't make it on our side. Now you've teamed up and you've jumped the fence one more time. Paul Jones, this is it. You will never, ever be a friend of mine again. Now, let me put it this way now. Humperdinck, his house is growing. He's got Leroy Brown. It doesn't matter who he's got. I guarantee when we come to Charleston, West Virginia, you're going to see a lot of action, and that includes you, Humperdinck.
Well, where to begin with that one? As I mentioned, Paul Jones wanted some gold. Apparently, Mike Rotundo's got a little bit more insight into what has been taking place with Paul Jones. I'm not sure if Tony Robbins' books at that point were all the rage. I'm not sure if maybe that Paul Jones saw that plaque where Vince Lombardi talks about what it takes to be number one. I don't know what it was there, but hopefully the man can get some gravity boots and get his head right there. There's the human quaalude, Mike Rotundo, let us all know.
I was just going to say, he's still taking the Ambien, but that's why I will never buy a self-help book, Mike. I don't want to turn heel, and I don't want to sell out to the almighty dollar, so I'm going to stay away from the self-help books.
And, kudos there to Jay Youngblood for mentioning that Paul Jones's turn on Ricky Steamboat way back when, and I guess way back when was 1970, was it 78? It was the end of 78 at the Touring Battle Royal where that took place. And it's Stick to Wrestling with John McAdam, one of the great shows here in the Arcadian Vanguard Network. And if you go to episode number 125 of that show, which is entitled Valentine's Favorite Stereo Salesman. He has on Greg Valentine's favorite stereo salesman from that time, Mike Gunter, who grew up in North Carolina in the 1970s and was a massive fan of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. Hopefully he listens to this show because he's the type of person that we want to spark the memories of and have some fun with. And, you know, Mike on that show mentions that turn from Paul Jones, you know, it was never the same after that again. You know, Paul Jones was never able to truly be a star on the babyface side of the ledger. And, you know, really, Roman, I'd have to double check, but this may be it. You know, once Paul Jones turns dirty here, this may be all for him as we, you know, go into the end of his professional wrestling career and into his managerial career.
Yeah, and his managerial career was not very highly thought of by a lot of fans. A lot of people kind of mock his stable and just him as a manager. Just if fans had seen Paul Jones as a wrestler, they might have a different opinion of him if they only saw him as a manager. There is kind of a tale of Paul Jones having two careers. So hopefully the fans out there are watching Paul Jones as a wrestler and see him where he shined a little bit brighter.
And even his managerial career, I mean, it's a tale of two halves, because when you look at the initial start that he had, it's much like the House of Humperdinck. He's going to collect a group of people around him that, you know, are at least relative stars, you know, even though he's going to be tied in with Jimmy Valiant for the entire time of his career, at least initially before we got to the Shaska Watley and the Tejo Khan portions of the proceedings, you know, which ultimately led to Manny Fernandez being the last guy to turn on Jimmy Valiant, which led into really the absolute end of Paul Jones's managing career with Rude and Fernandez, and then ultimately with Ivan Koloff again with the Russian Assassins, and then, you know, facing off against Ivan, who amazingly turned babyface at the very end of his career and was accepted by the fans as Nikita Koloff had come back. But that's certainly stories for a different day way later on down the line. But he had
the... You can't forget the Mighty Wilbur either.
Well, and the Mighty Wilbur, yes, in 1987. hit the legend from that Red Bastine had sent over. But, you know, initially at least, he had superstar Billy Graham. He had the employee of Abdullah the Butcher. He had the Assassin, and then whatever Assassin 2 would be along with him. He had stars, and then unfortunately what most people remember of him becomes later on, much like with the Boogeyman, those people who didn't see Jimmy Valiant at his peak and only got to see him face off against Shaska and the Barbarian and then down the line, and Unfortunately, things went south from there until the close of Jim Crockett Promotions and the selling of it, which led to the end of guys like Paul Jones and Johnny Weaver and others like that that had been around for decades and decades. But as we get back to the show here, we have what ends up being our last match on the ledger, which is the Ninja and Matt Bourne, along with Sir Oliver Humperdinck, against Jay Youngblood and Tim Horner. And Roman, while this is not a out of the realm match, it's still a little unusual, as usually in a case where we will see a Ninja and Matt Bourne against a X and a Tim Horner, it would be somebody like an Abe Jacobs. It surprises me that it's him and not maybe somebody else involved in this match where Tim Horner takes a loss.
And this match, Mike, was disappointing in the fact it was short. It was put on at the end of the program because on paper, this could have been a pretty good TV main event. You know, it was very short. It felt rushed. You know, Youngblood and Horner could have made a good team. This could have been a good contest. And then Ninja spent almost no time in the ring until the finish. And this would have been nice to see about 8 minutes, because I think these four could have put on a real nice contest.
Yeah, and there's one of the issues with going live to tape in that era is you're kind of stuck with what you're stuck with. And what also, you know, it's interesting, you know, you wonder and you ponder, maybe they had to throw Jay Youngblood in at the last minute because somebody else didn't show up. Maybe because of what took place with Piper the night before, you know, obviously they were going in different directions with guys, but who knows what could have happened, you know, when it came to the structure of this show. Maybe they had something else in mind. Maybe that's why Cash and Parsons were late. They told them to hold up. Or maybe because Cash and Parsons were late getting to the ring, that's what caused the cutoff in this match. So a lot of different things that you could kind of think about and throw around up in the air as to what maybe took place here. But as you mentioned, it really was a pretty disappointing match. And, you know, Ninja got the win over Horner, and that was pretty much that. And that led into what ended up being a relatively long promo to end the show, which also is very interesting with how short the match went, as Sir Oliver Humperdinck comes out there, and he's obviously got the Ninja and Matt Bourne around, and, you know, it's just about the House of Humperdinck expanding, and, you know, he makes a vague comment here upcoming about a man being signed who wants the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship, and as we know, ultimately, that person that is spoken about in vague terms has already been exposed as Paul Jones, but we'll go ahead and play the end of that match and go ahead and play the Sir Oliver Humperdinck promo with everybody to end the show.
Here was Bourne with that suplex. Watch him reach over now for the tag, the Ninja. Watch this move by Ninja on the ropes. Hard off, almost halfway across the ring now with a headbutt, and Horner does not get up. 1, 2, 3, the winners, Matt Bourne and Ninja. Well, the House of Humperdinck rules again right there.
That's exactly right. We proved it again. You know, a little while earlier, had I not known the mental condition that Roddy Piper is in right now due to the loss of his Mid-Atlantic heavyweight title and due to the other incident, I would have taken that as an insult, but I know he's got a lot on his mind. But let's talk about the House of Humperdinck now, because it's growing and it's expanding and it's breathing and there's life there, and you just saw an example of two of my guys, Maniac Matt Bourne and the Ninja. And what was the time? 2 minutes and some seconds.
Do we mean business when we get in the ring or what? If that wasn't an example, I don't know what is.
That's exactly right. And let's not forget the great Ivan Koloff. Jimmy Valiant, he's on your trail. He's trailing you, brother. He's trailing you. You better have one pair of eyes in the back of your head, because every time you turn around, Ivan Koloff or me is going to be there, Jack. Now let's talk about the big man over here.
The big man right here.
The big man from Chicago, Leroy Brown. From downtown. Listen, Leroy, I want you to tell these people what I've done for you here.
Hey, diamond ring, my man Humperdinck promised me gold. And that's all I got since I've been here. Diamond ring, gold chain, you name it. People talking about, what am I? And who am I loyal to? I'm loyal to Humperdinck and the House of Humperdinck, because there's one thing I understand. And that's money. You know, people can talk about this and talk about that, but I got something to tell you, Steamboat, and that is this. brother, you standing in my way. Humperdinck done told me, he said, Leroy, the only thing that's standing our way right now is Steamboat.
Rick Steamboat.
Hey, I got his name right. Steamboat! You guys thought we used to be friends. Well, let me tell you something. Money, hey! Make enemies out of a lot of people, brother, and you got one right now because you costing me a lot of money. And let me tell you something. I love money. And let me tell you something, Steamboat. When you make an enemy out of bad, Leroy Brown, you have made one, brother. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't care what it takes. I don't care what I have to do. I might catch him coming to the arena in the parking lot and end your career once and for all. Because I'm going to tell you something, Steamboat. I'm going to make an example out of you for all the rest of them can see. And then they'll know whenever they stick their nose in the bad business. Look here, brother, you in for the worst. You in for a wall. Steamboat, look out. Don't turn your back. Because in Chicago, baby, we ain't got no rules. The rules is survival, and bad will survive. Hey.
There's no room for egos in the house of Humperdinck. Money talks. No room for ego, so Steamboat, leave your ego at home. Because when you're fooling with the house of Humperdinck, it's money that talks, and that's what we're after.
That's exactly right. Big money, big dollars. But let's not forget a lot of other guys around here. Ricky Steamboat, you seem to have Leroy Brown a little miffed. But let's not forget about Wahoo McDaniels. Let's not forget about Jay Youngblood, who you just saw in the ring here today. Let's not forget about
Jack Briscoe's another.
That's exactly right. Jack Briscoe, the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Champion.
What about Jimmy Valiant?
Hey, listen, Jimmy Valiant has something that belongs to Koloff. Jack Briscoe has something that belongs to Piper. But I'm telling you one thing, Roddy Piper, I've got a couple of guys in my stable that I'd like to see wear that Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship. Some couple of guys that are signed with me right now. And Ivan Koloff, I promised him, I swore it on everything that was holy to me, that I would see that he get that TV title back. And Jimmy Valiant, I want you to take this as a warning, brother. Just as a warning. Always look over your shoulder. You'll never know when it'll happen, but brother, we'll get even. We don't get mad, but we get even.
Roman, there we hear from the House of Humperdinck, Sir Oliver Humperdinck, along with Matt Bourne, the ninja floating around there, as well as bad Leroy Brown. And comes down to the dollar when it comes down to Sir Oliver Humperdinck and his crew. Titles are important, but money, that's what they're talking about. So what'd you think about that?
Well, you know, Mike, just thinking about Matt Bourne, I believe the word you used was wonky, how bad Leroy Brown is with Humperdinck. And then last week, Bourne says he wants to get into the house of Humperdinck, and all of a sudden he's in. You know, I thought it would have been maybe effective if Bourne had had a match and Humperdinck helped interfere and said, hey, here's my newest member, or something. Just all of a sudden he's in the house, you know, and if you're going to acquire a talent, you would think it would be kind of like a big deal. And this just went with no fanfare. And as far as Leroy Brown, you know, they had talked, Humperdinck did, about how he wanted to lead him to be the first black NWA heavyweight champion. And just listening to him, you know, there was an old adage about you got to be able to talk him into the building. And Brown did not do that for me. So I'm glad he wasn't the first. I personally would have went with Butch Reed. You know, I thought he would have been a great choice, but you know, that's a whole topic for a different day. But a long promo followed up by a very short match, which could have been longer. The last 10 minutes of the show was kind of unusual for me, the way how they did things.
Now, see, I'm on the opposite side of the spectrum when it comes to Leroy Brown, because even though I thought that was a little bit of a long promo, I thought it was a very good promo, and I thought that's one of the things that he had going for him was the personality and the fact that he was able to cut usually a pretty solid interview. Now, I will say this, if there was going to be the first NWA Black Heavyweight Champion at that time, I am all in on Butch Reed, too. Butch Reed was fantastic. Here was another guy on Georgia TV and on Florida TV tied up with Ric Flair around that time that was absolutely fantastic. He stayed fantastic for years after that. And really, you know, a guy that was kind of in his physical lineage of a Ron Simmons, you know, a real athlete, a football player, a bad dude. You know, he ultimately was the one that ended up getting it when ultimately in the WCW era. But I agree with you on Butch Reed, but I don't agree with you on Leroy Brown, but I'll say this. Like you mentioned, that probably the promo time was so long and Humperdinck had so much time that he spent on everybody else. It may have been very beneficial to also mention that, hey, Matt Bourne is in here. I got Gene Anderson working with him. They're like two peas in a pod. These are my expectations. Matt, you want to make this money? Yeah, I want to make this money. All right, then let's go. You know, that probably would have been very beneficial to Matt Bourne and the relationship of getting him in to why he's there in the House of Humperdinck.
Yeah, or even have Bourne just gloating, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't need the fans. I've got Humperdinck, you know, screw you guys. I'm going to make money, or just something to put the cherry on top, you know, like, I'm with the House of Humperdinck. It just went kind of like it was almost swept under the rug. You know, last week he's pleading his case. This week he's there and it's kind of like no big deal.
Speaking of putting cherries on the top of things, now we're really not, we don't have that much more to say, I wouldn't think, Roman, do you, about this particular episode before I get into what I'm going to play here? Any final thoughts on the proceedings here, or do you just want to go ahead and fast forward a couple hours to about 6:05 p.m. Eastern time in Georgia Championship Wrestling?
Nah, let's hear some Georgia. Let's see what you got.
For a few weeks, nice to have him back with us. He'll be with us during the day. Roddy Piper, welcome aboard.
Well, Mr. Sully, due to popular demand, I sent in an interview here at VTR, and I said, America, put up or shut up. Well, eventually, they finally shut up, and here I am, and they had to conclude, whether they like me or not, Mr. Sully, that I knew what I was talking about. Much the same as yourself, you are the greatest impresario of professional wrestling commentating I have ever seen in my life. I am proud to be back here on Georgia Champion. We have great matches, Mr. Sully, and I'm here to commentate them just with you, Felsy-Welsy.
Indeed. All right, well, there you see him, Roddy Piper, back with us. Let me take a moment to talk about something that is rather distressing, however. We have a young man who's been competing here recently on championship wrestling by the name of Roy Rogers. We have come to find out, of course, that he, in fact, is not Roy Rogers, that he is a cousin to Tommy Wildfire Rich. And in order not to try and trade on the name of Rich,
I got one thing to say. In Morocco, I'm basing it right at you, brother. You know, you've tried to run over Dusty Rhodes. You tried to run over Tommy Rich. But it's Omni. Brother, you don't mess with family, and you don't mess with mine, Jack.
Yeah, if I may, I'll explain that situation. Rogers had to wrestle as a substitute competitor going up against the Magnificent Morocco. It was an excellent match. And Rogers is a young man who didn't want to trade on the name of Rich. He wanted to go out and make his own name, and that's why he chose the name Roy Rogers. As it turns out, he eventually lost the match, but it wasn't that was so bad. It was the fact of what Morocco did after the match.
You know, somebody's here trying to make a name for themselves. I don't know who he thinks he is or what he thinks he is, but Buzz Sawyer's going to show him who he is.
Let's go to the ring. Buzz Sawyer going up against Tito Santana. It'll be one fall with a 10-minute time limit.
I'm going to go ahead and pause it right there to kind of frame everything that is going on here. As Roddy Piper has introduced the show with Gordon Solie, he does not give any impression to the Georgia fans or the ones that are watching nationally that anything has changed with his persona at all. When Gordon Solie mentions the name of Roy Rogers, you hear about the yucking, galloping sound that Roddy Piper makes there. But it happens to be Roy Rogers that will be making a big part of the change in Roddy Piper and how he is viewed by the fans of Georgia wrestling, as he had a match against Don Morocco. Now, he got that match with Don Morocco with Roddy Piper at ringside, substituting for Leroy Brown. Now, why Leroy Brown in his current persona would have been down there facing Don Morocco, I don't know. But then again, the last time the people of Georgia had seen Leroy Brown, he was a babyface. So maybe he was going to be returning to the area as a conquering hero to face off against Don Morocco, who is causing all sorts of problems. But it looks as though that may have been a case of intentional false advertising, as we got Roy Rogers into that match on August 1st, 1982 at the Omni. And as Gordon mentions, Roy Rogers came up a little bit short against Don Morocco, but then we had found out that because of what took place, He is not Roy Rogers. He is actually Johnny Rich. And Johnny Rich then gets confronted a little bit later on by Don Morocco, which will begin the domino effects of Roddy Piper becoming a babyface in Georgia.
Mr. Rogers, if I may, I'd like to clarify one point now, if I could. Are we now to refer to you as Roy Rogers or Johnny Rich?
Well, Gordon, my real name is Johnny Rich. When I started out wrestling, me and Tommy talked it over, and we figured it'd be best if I went under a different name so I could get the experience that I needed in this wrestling, because it is a tough sport. I learn every day, Gordon. But me and Tommy, where we're from in Tennessee, people stick together, family especially. And I've never seen Tommy as mad as he is now. Morocco, buddy, I guarantee you, you're in for a big surprise. Tommy Rich is after you, buddy, and he's going to get you because he's hot. I've never seen him any hotter than he is now, Gordon.
Well, excuse me, Mr. Rich or Mr. Rogers. I had no time thought that I would rouse the ire of little Tommy Rich's cousin. Hey, look, I didn't come here. If I'd have known you were Tommy Rich's cousin, brother, if I'd have known you were Tommy Rich's cousin.
There's no reason for that. Let's go to a commercial break right now. There's no reason for this. This is baloney.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like this. Mr. Soli is hurt, and I'm not as good a commentator as Mr. Soli, but one thing, you know, hurting Mr. Soli, it's like snapping a pencil. It don't mean nothing.
And there we hear how it went down that night on WTBS Channel 17, the superstation beamed nationwide. Roddy Piper not exposing himself yet, but the beginnings of his babyface turn in Georgia, and that's how they took the Roddy Piper situation, being stabbed in Raleigh on Tuesday, August 3rd, a amazing event that changed the trajectory of not only Mid-Atlantic and of Georgia, and we're going to be talking about how it may have in the next upcoming weeks coming up here. So, Roman, there you hear it from Roddy Piper down in Georgia. Rod Piper, as Gordon Soli would love to call him there. The team with Don Morocco, the personal services contract that Don Morocco had with Roddy Piper up in Mid-Atlantic Wrestling. Obviously, Morocco is not there, but their dynamic, dastardly duo had continued down in Georgia, and now it looks like it is going to be coming to an end.
Yeah, Soli is just such a beloved figure that I don't think there's anybody that could have messed with Soli and not had the wrath of Georgia fans anywhere, you know. And later on, you know, jumping a little bit ahead with the Morocco attacking Soli and Piper coming to the rescue and whatnot. And you just didn't mess with Gordon Soli. He was a staple of Georgia Championship Wrestling, the same way Bob Cottle was a staple in the Mid-Atlantic area. Just two beloved figures that you did not get on, you did not do anything bad to them, because it was not going to endear you to the fans of that area.
And as you could tell, you know, Georgia had some time to turn Roddy Piper. And again, we'll be speaking about this over the next upcoming weeks, just basically because Piper does not turn full babyface down in Georgia until the end of the month. And it is a situation that will go into September. It's a situation that will see some old Mid-Atlantic faces pop up, like Ole Anderson. We're going to see Ivan Koloff be inserted into the mix as well, too. But we have a little bit of a longer burn there, where, as opposed to the Carolinas, that, as we've talked about the entire show, they had to get this thing done. There was so much heat on Roddy Piper that they had to go ahead and turn the page rather quickly. And as we'll get into next week, that page begins to be turned. And it's a very interesting thing about next week's show. There is not one on the WWE Network. And as I go through the results here of what takes place at the end, I'll explain exactly how next week's show is going to work. And we begin the results in Laurinburg, North Carolina on August 6th, a Friday night. Jack Briscoe defeated Roddy Piper. So Roddy Piper did wrestle just days after he got stabbed. And Wahoo McDaniel defeated the Ninja. Also on August 6th in Charleston at County Hall, Ricky Steamboat defeated Leroy Brown by DQ, while Jay Youngblood and Johnny Weaver defeated Angelo Mosca and Gene Anderson. Then, on Saturday night in Greensboro, August 7th at the Coliseum, later on from the show that we were talking about today, Wahoo McDaniel defeated NWA World Champion Ric Flair by disqualification in a 2-out-of-3 falls match. After the match, Flair went nuts on Wahoo, and we're going to hear all about that coming up and the ramifications that it would have on the National Wrestling Alliance itself. Jimmy Valiant also on that show defeated Ivan Koloff by disqualification in a New York street fight. I'm not sure how you win a match by disqualification in a New York street fight, but maybe we will find out in the weeks to come. Ricky Steamboat defeated Leroy Brown also by disqualification. And in a match that did not end in disqualification, at least one of them, Angelo Mosca and Gene Anderson, knocked off Johnny Weaver and Jay Youngblood. On August 8th in home territory in Charlotte at the Coliseum, Gene Anderson defeated Jake Roberts. Ricky Steamboat defeated Leroy Brown once again by disqualification. Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a Siberian Salt Miner's Glove match. And Wahoo McDaniel and Jack Briscoe defeated Roddy Piper and Ric Flair by disqualification. And guess what? In Charlotte, yeah, Ric Flair and Roddy Piper have a disagreement, which sends Roddy Piper further to the good guy side of the ledger, and Ric Flair officially to the heel side. Also on August 8th, up in Toronto at Maple Leaf Gardens, Paul Jones defeated The Ninja, Private Canoodle defeated Jay Youngblood, Jimmy Snuka defeated WWF champion Bob Backlund by countout, and Angelo Mosca defeated Sergeant Slaughter by disqualification. On the 9th in Oshawa, Ontario at the Civic Auditorium, the Privates defeated Johnny Weaver and Billy Red Lions, who stepped in filling for Tony Parisi, as Jay Youngblood defeated Gene Anderson, who was a sub for The Ninja. Also on August 9th, down in Greenville, South Carolina, in Memorial Auditorium, Wahoo McDaniel defeated Sergeant Slaughter in a lumberjack match, Jake Roberts defeated Angelo Mosca, and Jimmy Valiant and Jack Briscoe defeated Ivan Koloff and Leroy Brown. On August 10th in Columbia, South Carolina, at Township Auditorium, Ivan Koloff and Leroy Brown defeated Ricky Steamboat and Jimmy Valiant. And in a mixed tag, Candy Malloy and Ron Ritchie defeated Ben Alexander and Donna Christianello. Also on the 10th in Raleigh at the Civic Center, Velvet McIntyre and Sabrina defeated Leilani Kai and Joyce Grable. Matt Bourne defeated Porkchop Cash. Gene Anderson defeated Jake Roberts. Wahoo McDaniel topped Sergeant Slaughter in a Canadian Lumberjack match. And Jack Briscoe defeated Matt Bourne, who was substituting for Angelo Mosca. Also on the 10th, up in St. Catharines, Ontario, they held TV tapings at the Garden City Arena. And at most of those Canadian TV tapings for Maple Leaf Wrestling, wrestlers wrestled a ton of times. And the breakdown goes like this. Mike Rotundo, Jim Dalton, Kelly Kaniski, Nick DiCarlo, and Tony Parisi wrestled twice. Bill White, Paul Jones, Johnny Weaver, and Jay Youngblood wrestled three times, and Juan Reynoso in the Privates wrestled four times apiece, mixed up between tag matches and singles matches. And that takes us back around to Wednesday, August 11th at WPCQ Studios, Channel 36 in Charlotte, North Carolina. And as we mentioned several times on the show, this episode is not available on the WWE Network, but you will hear what took place not only on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, but on worldwide wrestling as well that week. Why? Because we have some great friends, our greatest friends over at the Mid-Atlantic Gateway. Dick Bourne and Dave Chappell have opened up their personal archive, and Dick has given to me the audio that he recorded from Mid-Atlantic and Worldwide off of Richmond TV, which includes some local Richmond promos for the showdown that will be taking place on August 27th at the Coliseum. Don't believe me? Well, how about this? Here's Jim Crockett Jr., who was very upset over Ric Flair's actions against Wahoo McDaniel in that match in Greensboro, North Carolina. He approached the NWA board and asked that Ric Flair be fined or suspended for his role and also to enforce a rematch against Wahoo McDaniel. The NWA turned Jim Crockett Jr. down, so Jim Crockett Jr. resigned as the president of the National Wrestling Alliance.
And speaking of interesting things, right here with us now, NWA President Jim Crockett, who has a message for all you wrestling fans.
Thank you, Bob. I'm glad to be here today. wanted to come today to tell the fans that I resigned recently as president of the National Wrestling Alliance due to the actions of Ric Flair and the board of directors' total lack of concern for the wrestling fans and the welfare of the wrestlers in the ring. On August the 7th, Wahoo McDaniel wrestled Ric Flair in Greensboro, North Carolina, had the match won, in my opinion. Ric Flair then went totally berserk, tried to put Wahoo out of wrestling. He picked up a ring stanchion and busted his head open badly. I went to the board and requested they fine or suspend Ric Flair for his actions. They refused. Then Ric Flair notified the board that he would never wrestle Wahoo McDaniel again. And I asked the board to order him to wrestle Wahoo, and they did not. Ric Flair earns his living from the wrestling fans.
Right.
And I think he is cheating the fans, and I think the board is cheating the fans by not ordering this, and so I have resigned.
Jim, I tell you, I'm stunned by that. All right, fans, there you had the words right from the mouth of Jim Crockett, who is now the former NWA president.
And there you hear it right from the horse's mouth. Jim Crockett Jr. resigns as the president of the National Wrestling Alliance. We have the fallout from Roddy Piper being stabbed. We have a ton of things taking place. The expansion of the House of Humperdinck. Feuds going in different directions. We have a whole lot to get into because of the great work of Dick Bourne and Dave Chappell over at the Mid-Atlantic Gateway. I am always in awe of the work that they do. As I have mentioned many times, there would not be a Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast without the Mid-Atlantic Championship. Without the Mid-Atlantic Gateway and all of the work that they have done, the Almanac, everything. And we will talk about their books and Dick Bourne's books coming up next week, but I heartily suggest all of you rush out and buy an edition of Crown Jewel, the NWA World Championship 1959 to 1973, a brand new book available from Amazon.com, only $14.95, 168 pages filled with stories, title lineages, and some amazing pictures. Dick Bourne, author of 10 Pounds of Gold, Big Gold, Minnesota Wrecking Crew, Four Horsemen, so many awesome books. And I beg of you, if you have not already, and I don't know how that's possible, if you haven't, please get over and check out MidAtlanticGateway.com. Follow them on Twitter at MA Gateway. It is absolutely worth it. If you like this show, you will absolutely adore what they do over there. Keeping history alive, that's really what we're all about here. As I mentioned earlier on, if you like this show and would like to connect with it more, I invite you to follow us on all of our forums of social media, especially our Twitter. Just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. And also, please support all of the shows here on the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. We don't condescend, and we are dedicated to preserving and accurately archiving the history of professional wrestling. And I'm proud that this show, executive produced by me, can be a part of that. For Roman Gomez, I'm Mike Sempervivi. Take us home, Uncle Bob.
And that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.